Welcome back. It is 7 p.m. We're at the Lindale Church of Christ building here in Lindale, Texas. Reagan McClenney is back.
Good to be back.
That's always great. We've had a really fun spring doing this together. We hope that you've enjoyed it as well. We are really excited. I think we probably say this every week. Really excited about our character tonight.
We ought to say it every week.
We are. Yeah. I think we genuinely are. In fact, while we will be covering the topic of Ruth tonight, and that's on the heading there of whatever video you're watching, we actually think there's some connections that can be made to another section of the Old Testament and some interesting ways, we hope you'll find it interesting, of pulling that together. And we'll do as much of that as we possibly can tonight. We've really enjoyed doing this. This is kind of a night back for us. Last week we had it pre-recorded. We actually weren't here live. And that's the second time we've done that. I think people figured us out last week.
I don't think anybody knew except for like our wives the first time. But when you're posting like from vacation, like 30 minutes before, they're like, did he fly from like Arizona?
I feel like that was the mistake.
Maybe so. Maybe
I do.
So.
Which we're going to have to do a little bit of that going forward. We'll be live tonight. Next week, Lord willing, we will. And then we may have to do a little bit of that later because somebody else will be traveling. Our plan, by the way, is, of course, tonight we'll cover Ruth, and then, Lord willing, we will have three more Wednesday nights. On July the 8th, Wednesday, July the 8th, the Lindale Church will be starting classes again. We'll be here for classes. That gives us three. Really quickly, Reagan, tell us a little bit about the three characters, or four characters requested. Mm-hmm. Ruth was one of them. What were the other three that we're hoping to cover before we're done?
Well, as you said, we wanted to go with those requests that we had from folks. And Philip the Evangelist, we got actually several from him and text messages and so forth. Also, Saul, who became Paul, so the Apostle Paul in that transition, which is super fascinating. And then David, which there's lots of things to talk about there with his shortcomings, but then also his successes as a foreshadowing of Christ.
It makes me smile because you're perpetually mad at David.
He could have done better. But his heart was right.
Lord willing, we're putting that one at the end because it's obviously going to bring us back around to Jesus. And we really want to make sure we end it in that way as we cover these characters of faith and we get inspired as we move along the way. As you can see, we will be in the book of Ruth tonight. So head back to your Old Testaments. If you hit Judges, take a right. The book of Ruth is there. It's only four chapters in length. We will not take all of the 40, 45 minutes covering just this. There are a couple of other things we want to try to pull together for you. But for the first portion, the first third or so, we do want to talk to you about the book of Ruth. I'm going to put her over on the left side like that. We're going to make some points from her story. Before we get into the four points, we'll make one observation from each chapter that I think you'll see how those work together. Tell us a little bit about the story, the history, the setting of this book.
So we find ourselves at the period of the time of the judges. Every man is doing what is right in his own eyes. And there's a famine in Bethlehem. And of course, New Testament Christians understand the significance of that place. But that name means house of bread. There's a famine. And so this family leaves and goes to Moab. And that's where we find the setting of the story in Moab and then coming back to Bethlehem.
This Jewish family goes to this land, and we know a little bit about what happens there. So let's get into that story. You're in chapter 1. You ought to be looking right there at those first 22 verses, and Reagan's going to set it up for us. But as we walk into it, what we're going to find is when we come across Naomi and her family and then ultimately Ruth, we're dealing with weeping women, really plural, and the point is this is not a great situation. The things that have happened here, the death that they have to deal with, being away, Naomi was from her homeland and alone, and then ultimately Ruth having to make the decision to leave her homeland. These are not easy circumstances. They are not comfortable circumstances. They're very sad and heavy. And by the way, as we've been talking before tonight, you see that in so many of these stories, specifically these women of faith who end up shining and just changing the world. They come through very difficult, tearful situations like Hannah did and Abigail and others. So tell us a little bit about the weeping aspect of chapter 1.
Well, there's just a lot of hardship in the first chapter. You know, Ruth marries into this family and her father-in-law dies and then her husband dies and then her brother-in-law dies. And so now there are three widows and her mother-in-law is now going to go back to Israel. She and her sister-in-law, they both say they're going to go, but their mother-in-law, Naomi, says, no, go back to your own people. Her sister-in-law does that, so now she's lost her sister-in-law, and so it's just her and her mother-in-law. That's it. And despite all of this sorrow, all of this loss, apparently there's no children in any of this. Right. There's nobody that's going to provide for her in any sort of way. Despite all of that, what we see with Ruth is that she could not be dissuaded from doing what was right. She was going to do what was right. That meant going with Naomi. That meant serving Yahweh, the God of Israel. And she was going to do that, and she could not be dissuaded from doing anything different. If you're there in chapter 1, notice there in verse 15, "And she said," this is Naomi speaking to Ruth, "Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following you. For wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God," singular, "my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. The Lord, Yahweh, do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts you and me." And when she saw that she was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you see that faithfulness. You know, you have weeping multiple times in the chapter, and that's why we've drawn this terminology. Just before verse 15, when you have that beautiful speech of commitment, you have this verse that says, verse 14, "They lifted up their voices and they wept again." They'd been weeping and crying and uncertain. I mean, you can only imagine what's going on there. And so that's what's so beautiful about her story early on. No matter how sad, how hard, how many things had happened, and these were very desperate things, she was committed to this woman whom she wanted to care for, her mother-in-law, and she was committed to God. And she didn't let circumstances dissuade her from those commitments. You're going to need more of that in a little while.
Well, I think in times of sorrow and weeping, sometimes that's when we're at our most vulnerable from Satan. And yet, that's when we see her shine the brightest. You know, there's a lot of people, and it's good. It's a good thing. There's a lot of people that can be dissuaded from doing what's wrong. You know, "Hey, don't do that. That's wrong." And say, "Okay, I won't do it." Other people can be persuaded to do what's right. You know, "Hey, this is what you really need to do." And they say, "Okay, I see that. I'll do that." But what's awesome about Ruth is she can't be dissuaded from doing what's right. She's going to do what's right. Even if you tell her not to do it, she's still going to do what's right. And that's what's awesome about her. Even in these terrible circumstances, she was committed to that. And as well,
that's
we
right.
should be too.
And we're going to see more great things about her. But I want to note now, this is not some biblical scholar. This is not someone with a faith that's developed past anybody you've ever met. This is just a good person. And this is what a good person does. When you're listening to this tonight, we're specifically trying to encourage women, but I think there's a lot of usage for men here.
Sure.
You know, we're not talking about someone you can never be because of how much she knows and how much she's been through. She just has this character that can hold strength through weeping. And that character proves in other ways itself when we get into chapter 2. So chapter 2, they leave that land, they go back to Israel. What's she going to do? Is she going to sit in her room and cry and sleep and lament what has happened? Is she going to start, you know, the busybody, useless stuff? No. The next thing we note about Ruth, it's so awesome, is she is a worker. She gets out there in the fields and she works. You see it in verse 7. "Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, 'Please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor.'" So you have reference to this man Boaz, and she thinks a relationship with Boaz might be possible. Focus on this. Maybe a relationship with Boaz might be possible, but you don't just lay at home and wait for it to happen. You don't do the woe is me thing, and he's drawn to that. Remember Abigail? David wasn't drawn to Abigail because she just sat there and watched it all happen. He was drawn to her because of her work, because she baked and worked and went out and made things better. And you see that again in verse 7. "Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." Thus she came and has remained from the morning until now. She's been sitting in the house for a little while. And Boaz notices this. You know, this story ends up beautiful. It's great redemption story, great word in chapter 4. But it starts with a woman who just gets out there and labors and works. We're not advocating. This isn't about women working and careers. This is just about a woman who says, "What can I do? I want to be active." And he was drawn to that.
Well, you talk about how beautiful the story is and how it all turns out. None of this would have happened if Ruth hadn't have been so industrious in what she was doing. You think about it. She was there working since early morning until now, the laborer said. You know, how now are we talking about? Late in the afternoon? But she had been working all day, and Boaz says, "Whose woman is that? Who is she? I don't recognize her."
Yeah.
Because she had been there working all day, he's able to see her and make this connection, and all of the things work out according to God's providence, all because she was a woman who was going to do what she could.
Not a woe is me person. She's active. You know, verse 17 mentions it again that we're in chapter 2. So she gleaned in the field until evening. You see a lot of that. But listen to what Boaz said in verse 11. Boaz replied to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." And then she just goes out there and works some more. You know, says, "I'm just going to go back to work now." He saw that. And by the way, the work wasn't just field work. The work was taking care of Naomi, comforting her, traveling with her, just doing what was right instead of not doing things. And that's a big difference in how you handle trials, I think. Any final thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, they were sitting around the house at the beginning of this chapter, and it could have been easy to just sit there, as you say, sit there and weep. Instead, she said, "What can I do?"
Yeah.
And that's a great question. What can I do?
Now, what's interesting is our second point in chapter 2 is that she was working, but as you move to chapter 3, she knows when to be active and she knows when not to be active. She knows when to take on a task and she knows when to not. And what I'm saying is, as we get to chapter 3, and I'm going to let Reagan explain this. He's going to make it all sound normal. Like this is perfectly obvious behavior. But what we have here in chapter 3 is she has her opportunity to maybe begin a relationship with Boaz. He's already taken note of her and communicated with her. So she goes to Naomi, her mother-in-law, and she's kind of like, "What do I do? How do I work this out so that he will notice me?" And Naomi gives some interesting advice. Tell us about it.
It's interesting.
It is.
But I think that's part of what makes what Ruth does so powerful here. All right, so we'll just read it to show you how interesting it is. Verse 2, "Now Boaz, whose young women were with you, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself. Put on your best garment and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies down. You shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do." I mean, what strange advice. Now, there's obviously some cultural things that are going on here, but her response in verse 5, "And she said to her," Ruth said to Naomi, "all that you say to me, I will do." Now, this is incredible. This is the same woman that we saw in chapter 1 when her mother-in-law said, "Go back to your people and your God." She said, "Nope, I don't care what you tell me. It's not going to happen. I am going with you. Your people are my people. Your God, my God." Then she gives her this advice. I mean, worldly standards, the advice of chapter 1 is pretty good advice. The advice of chapter 3 is pretty terrible advice.
Odd, yes.
But in chapter 3, because it's not a matter of right and wrong, this is a matter of wisdom, she submits to Naomi. This stubborn, in a good way, this stubborn, strong, beautiful, independent woman, she could submit to the wisdom of others.
Hardworking, maybe forward and aggressive in a good way in terms of labor, but yet she didn't go and overtake Boaz or demand anything, even though he had shown that he noticed her. Instead, she basically became like a house cat. She laid at his feet until he noticed. Well, let's read it. Verse 7, "When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain." This is chapter 3, verse 7. "And she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down." So she just waits. This is where we have our waiting. She just goes exactly where Naomi says. She just lays there and she waits. "It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He said, 'Who are you?' And she answered, 'I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative.' Then he said," here's his response to this, "'May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask." Notice how he just is absolutely engaged in this. Verse 11, "For all my people in the city know that you are," New American Standard Version, "a woman of excellence," New King James,
"virtuous woman."
She's known. Why is she known? She's known for her commitment to Naomi. She's known for her work ethic and her respect. And now she knows when to be submissive, when to take on a role that draws the love and compassion of this leader. And he is smitten with her. She was with him, but she behaved in a very beautiful way. And it just drew him right in.
You know, there, there is a misconception out there among many people in the world, maybe meeting people in the church, that submission is due to weakness. But there is no stronger woman portrayed in all of the Bible than Ruth. Now, maybe some just as strong, but no stronger. She took charge. She worked as hard as any man, whatever cliche you want to use. But she knew when to submit and serve and wait on the timing of others. In this chapter, she submits to Naomi, she submits to Boaz, and ultimately she submits to the will of God. Despite her strength, she knew when to serve and wait and to submit, as she does here in this chapter. And it's not weakness, it's in her strength.
It's wisdom.
Yeah. And wisdom.
Yeah, for sure.
That she's willing to do that.
The end of the story then, having come together in this way, is we now have the wedded woman, which fits because of the W's.
Yeah,
you did great on this.
Thank you.
The wedded woman. And what we have here is, of course, there's this interesting part that we won't get into too deeply where Boaz is like, I would love to marry you, but there's someone else who's in more of the line. And that guy's like, one wife is enough for me.
He's like, oh, the land? That's great.
Yeah, the land and another wife.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, okay, all right. So anyway, so in the end, it clears out. It's beautifully, it's all God's providence, and it clears out, and he's able to do so. And just to wrap up this story, because we have some other things we want to introduce to you, you get down to verse 10. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth, the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, to be my wife, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance, so that the name of the deceased will not be cut off from his brothers or from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today. Really quickly, it just shows the respect of Boaz, good man as well. All the people who were in the court and the elders said, we are witnesses. This is verse 11. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built the house of Israel. And may you achieve wealth in Ephrathah and become famous in Bethlehem. Moreover, verse 12, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah through the offspring which the Lord will give you by this young woman. So Boaz took Ruth, verse 13, she became his wife. And then ultimately she births Obed, and Obed Jesse, and Jesse David. And redemption's a big part of this story. She gets redeemed. She's a foreigner. She has no right to this lineage of God. And because of her demeanor, her attitude, her wisdom, even though she wasn't, you know, fully developed in the Hebrew nation, she's rewarded with this great riches and honor and praise and blessing. And she has children, and they lead to David, and David leads to Jesus, and Matthew 1 includes her. And it's just a beautiful ending to the story.
She put herself in a position to be blessed by God. God wants to bless us. And here this foreigner, this Moabitess, she gets past all of that to put herself in this position to be blessed abundantly by God, not just with a husband, not just with a son, but ultimately to be part of the line of Christ.
Good
stuff. Because of who she was.
Great story. So there's your story. There's four chapters. It's wonderful to read. We recommend you just read it through or have some audiobook or something read it to you. Now, what we want you to do for the time being is just forget about her. Just that was neat. It was 20 minutes.
Hard to forget.
Hard to forget. I know you love this story very much. We all do. And there's some points in each that we can use. But instead, we're going to ask you to leave the book of Ruth for a minute. And we want you to go to the end of the book of Proverbs. We're asking you to turn from the book of Ruth to Proverbs 31. You guys know all about this. We study it a lot. There's a lot of, you know, businesses and stuff that house this name. But the Proverbs 31 woman, do you remember her? We want to talk to you a little bit about her, and we want to show you some attributes here about her. This is actually quite a controversial chapter, Proverbs 31.
It is.
We really could have spent the whole time talking about it. This woman you're about to see did a lot of things. She did a lot of things in the home. She did a lot of things out of the home. And there's some interesting takes. I think we'll go ahead and cover this now, Reagan.
Sure.
There's some interesting takes on what this is about. There are some who believe that she really didn't do any of these things. She didn't go to the ships. She didn't buy the land. She didn't build all the things, cook all the things. They look at verse 25, Proverbs 31, 25, just to talk about her a moment. And it says that strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. And there are some who say that really strength and dignity is what this is about. It's about a spiritually strong, dignified woman. And she didn't really do all that with the clothing. It's just imagery for the fact that she was strong and dignified. Now, if you believe that, that's fine. I've been swayed in that direction as well in times past and maybe times future. She was strong and dignified. But there is a way of looking at all that she did as things that she actually did without turning the world upside down and demanding that women go start careers to be a real woman. Help us understand the right way to look at this a little bit more literally.
Okay, so I think one of the hurdles we have to get over is we read through all of that and we're like, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
That is a lot. And so I think one thing, and I've seen this put forth in different arenas, Bible classes and blogs and that sort of thing. And so I know that this is a perception that's out there. I think sometimes people look at this and say, well, that was Tuesday for the worthy woman, for the excellent woman.
Right.
You know, that was yesterday. It's like we opened up her day planner and here's all the things that she did. And how can I possibly do all of those things?
Yeah.
And I think the first thing that we have to see is that this is not a day in the life of. It is glimpses of different days and times throughout her entire life. I mean, you think about something just like verse 16. She considers a field and buys it. From her profits, she plants a vineyard.
Yeah.
Even that's going to take years.
Yeah,
it's going to take years to, okay, I'm going to find the right field. I'm going to buy the field. I've got other profits. I'm going to plant a vineyard. We know that a vineyard takes several years before it bears fruit, and then at least another 1 or 2 years before you have fruit that it's really usable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so this is something that takes place over the course of her life. But then the second thing that I think is helpful as we look at this from a more literal standpoint, she is, I believe, intended to be an ideal.
Yeah.
This is an ideal woman. This is a mother talking to her son in chapter 31 and saying, hey, this is the kind of woman you need to find. This kind of ideal woman, this is who you need to be looking for. And if we look at her from that perspective, we look at her much more like we would look at Jesus. I'm never going to live up to Jesus and all that he did and all that he was, but I'm striving to be like him. And so in the same way, I think we can strive to be like this woman without being intimidated, without being discouraged by the things that she does.
Yeah, and there are a couple other variables that are unique to this case. This is a king. He's probably wealthy, probably has a lot of servants. He's going to find a woman who's interested in a lot of great things that are good for them. And so she might have a lot of people who can help her with this. We're not saying you go out and have to do all these things. She may not have actually gone out and done them. She just managed them. More importantly, whether you take this literal or figurative or how you mesh the two, there is no way on earth that this woman forgot the importance of her home for the sake of things outside the home.
No.
The core of this chapter is taking care of her husband and her children and how she was an excellent wife, not an excellent entrepreneur. She was an excellent wife and she was praised in the gates for her relationship with her husband. So she did these things. They were great. They were wonderful things, but they were an extension of what was at her core, which was taking care of her family. Just like the book of, you know, Titus and Timothy would say women taking care of your husband and taking care of your children and your home. She did that. She would never usurp that in order to do other things. To help you kind of see that, and we don't have all night, we probably should have just done this on its own if we wanted to really excavate it. But we put together 4 points that can kind of sum up what happened here. And I think however you interpret the chapter, you can agree with these 4 things. Number one, however you look at it, clearly this is a woman of faith. And what we mean by faith, which goes along with our series, is this is a woman who has put her trust in God, who fears and obeys God. She is faithful to her creator. She is faithful to her husband. You get the husband at the beginning. Reagan will show it to us. You get faithfulness to her husband at the beginning of the read. You get faithfulness to God at the end of the read. And everything else fits in between.
So, again, we're looking for this virtuous wife who's worth is far above rubies. Verse 11, the heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. And so there's faithfulness to her husband there. If we drop down to, let's say, verse 25, strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. I was telling Chris,
awesome.
That's a beautiful description of a mother, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the law, but it's the law of kindness. And really, that's what we see with the law of God as well.
Yeah.
But it's not just faithfulness to her husband and her children and her home and all these other things, but it's also faithfulness to God. Notice verse 30. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. And then it describes how this woman is praised by her husband, by her children, and by the people in her community.
Yeah. Her husband trusts her. Her children learn the truth through her, and she trusts and fears God. That's the ideal. You want to talk about the ideal. That's the fundamental thing about women whom God can use. And that's what's beautiful about her. What you see here may be beyond where you are, but it ought to be the ideal that you're pursuing. And we'll make more in the connection on the two sides will help with that.
Absolutely. I'll just say this. I want to say it again at the end. It's not about what she does. It's about who she is. And the things that she does is just representative of who she is, of her character.
So some of the things that she does, we would categorize as industrious. And
sure.
I know this is kind of the debatable part. You say, well, she shouldn't have been so industrious. If it's literal, she would have burned herself out doing all these things. We've tried to at least give you some brief explanations of that. But think about it biblically in terms of the opposite of industrious. What's the opposite of industrious? Lazy. It's people who weep and do nothing. It's people who are busybodies, who are gossips. Doesn't the New Testament talk about that? This woman's not going to sit back and do nothing. She's going to serve. Part of that service, we'll talk about in a minute, was others. But industrious nature was behind that. So you look in, I don't know, verse 13, and this is where we get into all this activity. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She's like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it's still night. She gives food to her household. So there's that importance of the house. And portions to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. And you can kind of go on and on here. The distal, the spindle in verse 19, what she does with her hands. And look, she's busy. She's active. She's doing things as an opposite of gossip and, I don't know, Facebook and soap operas and whatever. She's doing things within the confines of serving her family first. And I think it's a positive here no matter how you interpret this.
Well, you see that she gets up early, she stays up late, she does not eat the bread of idleness, but just go through sometimes and look at all of the verbs of the things that she does. Specifically, the verbs do and makes are interspersed throughout all of this. Verse 13, 22, 24, 29, these verbs of actions are continually used of her. She is not going to eat the bread of idleness and sit around and do nothing. She's going to be working. And man or woman, that's what God has called us to be, people of work, of service toward other people.
Yeah, which is where we're headed with this. He referenced verse 27. We have to make sure you see it. She looks well to the ways of her household. Point we're making, that's a central point. She would never overlook her household to go buy some land. But as an extension of how she takes care of her household and helps, those are things over time that she was able to do. The rest of verse 27 kind of makes the point, generically we're trying to make, does not eat the bread of idleness. However you want to interpret industrial behavior here, it is the opposite of idleness. And idleness has been the bane of the existence of men and women and families and cultures for many, many years. This woman is the ideal of activity. And that activity, of course, relates to service. Why is she doing all that? Does she want to get rich or famous? Is it about recognition? What's the deal? You know what it's about. First of all, number one, it's about honoring God, serving her husband. But look at the service ideas. By the way, we think we made up the word serviceful.
We're pretty sure we did.
Pretty sure we did. We got a lot of red squiggly lines, stuck with it. Got to stick with this stuff. But serviceful, tell us a little bit about how what's behind this is the people in her life and her ability to do, I don't know what the Bible says, you know, serving and supporting.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what she's doing. And that's, I believe, ultimately the point that's being made in Proverbs 31. Proverbs is written to a young man, right? This chapter specifically is written from a mother to a son. And so the point of all of this is, son, when you go out and you look for a woman, you need to find a woman like this. Someone who, as we read verse 12, does you good and not evil all the days of your life. And then I really like verse 23. You know, 23 is really verses 10 through 31 when we're going up the steps of the things she's doing and back down the steps of the things she's doing. 23 is really at the heart of that. And it's interesting. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. That's not just some random fact about her husband. You know, let me tell you all about her. Oh, by the way, her husband. Yeah. Now let me tell you some more about her. Now, what it's saying is, son, if you find a woman like that, a woman who can help you and serve you in this way, someone who is truly a helpmeet, as Adam was looking for in the garden, if you find a woman like that, her worth is far above rubies, because you are going to be successful in life because of her. You will sit among the elders in the gates, which is the most important place of position, because of her and because of her service and because of who she is.
Marry that girl.
Marry that girl.
Why? Because of this. Not because of her beauty. not because of the things that the world would define, because of this. And it's not just serving your husband. You have other verses, like in verse 20, she extends her hand to the poor. A lot of what she was doing wasn't about richness or garnering recognition. It was about making sure they had what they needed to clothe her children, support her husband, and help people in need. And look, I know the bar seems really high with her, but men and women alike, we can pursue this goal. I mean, this serviceful goal can start with even the most basic of decisions, by even the most young of Christians. And I want to end with one final thing on this right side we'll talk about here. We want to talk to the men just a minute. We're both married to women that we love very, very much, and we see these attributes in them both, and we're very thankful for that. We're blessed beyond what we deserve. But the question is, do they hear us say that? And is our attitude one that rewards this kind of behavior? If you're a husband and you have a wife who exhibits any number of these things, it's even growing in these things from any level to another level. One of the things we find here is that she was a blessed woman. She was blessed by God. She was praised. We almost use the word praised. It's the same idea. She was praised by her husband, praised by her children for the beautiful attributes that we see here. And I just think that it's so very sad when women are pursuing these incredible God-centered ideals and they get no recognition, but they do it anyway because of who they are.
Sure.
Maybe what they really need from us is praise. Tell us a little bit about how this letter ends up.
Well, we see at the beginning and then at the end that same idea that this is a woman who's worthy. This is a woman who is worth so much. And then at the end in verse 28, her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. And they say this, many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. Yeah. That same place where her husband sits, let she be praised there. And you know, Stephanie would absolutely kill me if I talked about how awesome and amazing she was on a Facebook video that's out there for everybody. She would kill me if I did that. Well, so I'm not going to do that.
You share that now. People are going to want to know.
But I need to praise her in the ways that she wants to be praised for who she is. However, husbands, however your wife needs that from you, if she's a worthy woman, she deserves that praise from you.
Children, rise up and bless her. Husband praises her. The people in her life support her. Fellow Christians in our age and time would support and encourage and praise women who do this. And men need to be doing that. That's great leadership to do that. I would add, I would never say that Scripture needed to be altered in any way. It's perfect in the form that it is written. I might suggest just one modern amendment.
Okay.
Reagan, this makes Reagan very nervous. A lot of our conversations make Reagan a little bit nervous. But verse 30 says, charm, if you're going to say this to your wife, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, comma, you are very charming.
Yes.
And you, not, I mean,
thank
you.
You're
charming.
It.
Yeah. Tell your wife, you are charming, you are beautiful. You don't want to make them think, well, you're not beautiful, but at least you're this. You are.
Or you used to be, but it's past.
Ooh, stop. That goes on the no list. All right. You're beautiful, but in addition to the beauty that has drawn me to you, there's something much, much more important to me. You fear God, and I praise you for that. We want them to know that they're beautiful to us, but we also need them to know there's something that matters more. And I think that means a lot to women to hear that.
And young men, when you're looking, take the advice
of
whoever King Lumiel was.
Right.
Take the advice of his mother. Look for a woman like this, and let that be what draws you. Mm. You know, I'm married to a beautiful woman. But what drew me most to her was her heart and her spirit. And I think you can say the same thing about your wife.
Love it. Yes, absolutely.
And that's what needs to be the thing that draws you, is her commitment to the Lord, her love for the Lord, and that she's going to go to heaven no matter what.
Yeah. Awesome. And this can be helpful for that. And again, we're not saying you need to go out and find a wife who's matured in and through all of these things. This is a lifetime of faith. But these basic characters, faithful over untrustworthy, industrious over idle, serviceful of others instead of selfish, blessed by God instead of cursed by God. Those are huge things. Those are incredibly valuable attributes. Now, stay in Proverbs 31 a moment. We only have a few minutes left. We want to use it, maybe an extra minute or two past it, but we'll try.
Don't tell them that.
It's like a 40. Do you guys do 45-minute classes? I can't remember.
Well, when I go over.
That's now we do. Yeah. Well, we'll see. Remember how forever ago we started by talking about Ruth, and maybe you've seen it already, but we wanted you to notice that you have this kind of fully formed and functioning example of excellence with the Proverbs 31 woman. With Ruth, it's a little bit more adolescent. It's a little bit more beginner, you know. She's coming into the nation of Israel. But we believe there are purposeful connections between these two stories. And when you think of one, you ought to think of the other. And I'm going to begin by showing you a couple of things. And then Reagan's got some really neat data on the Hebrew Bible. But if you're in Proverbs 31, you know this verse. This is the New American Standard Version. Others might use the word virtue or virtuous, but you know that the section in Proverbs 31 opens with an excellent wife who can find. That's what this is about, the description of the excellent wife. Now, if you're able to do so swiftly, go back to Ruth now. Go back to Ruth chapter 3. I want to remind you in verse 11 of what was said about her. In Ruth chapter 3, verse 11, "Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you." Remember, this is after she had approached in submission Boaz. He said, "I will do for you whatever you ask for all my people in the city," in the gates. If that makes a great connection for you, they know. They know that you are a woman of excellence. Same exact Hebrew word, same connection. I know you are. They know you are. She wasn't this great, developed, older lady that had done a thousand things, but she had some qualities about her that had already made a difference. Tell us about the Hebrew Bible stuff. It's really cool.
So the question is asked, an excellent wife, who can find? Who can find a woman like this? And maybe we talked about how she's an ideal, right? But perhaps it would help us if she were a real woman. I mean, Job 31 is a very similar list to Proverbs 31, but nobody gets mad at Job and says, well, nobody could live up to this. We say, well, Job basically was these things that he says, right? So it helps us when we have a real person to tie it to. And this woman, Proverbs 31, she's many women in the Old Testament, but I believe she's intended to be one in particular. In the Hebrew Bible, we know it was divided up into three basic sections. You had the law, the first five books, the Pentateuch, the Torah. Then you had the prophets, which for them was the early prophets. So Joshua, Judges, 1st, 2nd Samuel, 1st, 2nd Kings, and then the later prophets. We call them major and minor prophets. Stick with me. And then the third grouping was the writings. And the writings was basically everything else. This is a hodgepodge. We have the wisdom literature in there and a few other things, including Ruth. Now, when we see the arrangement of the Hebrew Bible and we find ancient manuscripts and the order that they're in, we find the law in the same basic order. We find the prophets in the same basic order. But the writings comes in several different orders. And what we find is usually the wisdom literature minus the book of Ecclesiastes is first, followed by the book of Ruth. And often what we find is the book of Proverbs immediately followed by the book of Ruth. And so the question is asked, excellent wife who can find, in chapter 31, you read through it and you say, well, who can find a woman like that? Yeah. And the very next thing you read is the book of Ruth, and Boaz says, you are an excellent woman. And specifically he says, and New King James, New American Standard, they both obscure this. It's not the people of your town. It says, you are an excellent woman, and everyone in the gates of the city knows that. Where is the excellent woman going to be praised in chapter 31 of Proverbs? In the gates. And what I believe the Holy Spirit is doing is he's saying, okay, here's this ideal. Now let me give you one example.
An achievable example.
Achievable,
like a naturally growing example.
Absolutely.
From an infant. I mean, she's a Moabitess. I mean, you can't start much further away than being a Moabitess, being in the graces of God. And yet, it starts with a commitment to marriage, and then a commitment and then to Naomi, then a commitment to God, and then a work ethic. So what we want you to do to help with Proverbs 31, which gets studied often, is think about it in terms of the Hebrew Bible layout. When you read Proverbs 31 and you're thinking, how? Ruth is only four chapters. Read it. That's how. And we want to show this to you. We've already shown it to you here, but you remember the four things? These don't feel unattainable to me, for men or women, but specifically for even younger women as they grow, and older women as they learn new tricks, as they say, and they kind of find ways of growing past where they've been. Look, she got sad, and she wept, and it hurt, but she stayed committed, and she stayed faithful. She stayed faithful to Naomi. She stayed faithful to God, this wonderful woman. No matter what happens in Proverbs 31, she stays faithful to her husband, her children, and to God. That connection there seems a lot more doable when you look at someone like her. And help us with the second one. What we saw in Ruth is she's out there working in the fields. She's doing what she can as opposed to idleness. And Reagan, isn't that a natural connection to all this industrialness that we see in Proverbs 31?
Well, Ruth exemplifies that attitude. She volunteers to Naomi, let me go and do something. Boaz's men, now these are the workers, right? These are the field workers, the guys that are out there in the hot sun every day. They say, look, this lady knows how to work. She works hard. She's only taking a short break. She was here early in the morning. She's late in the day. She works through wheat and barley season. She just keeps working. She beats out what she gleans. When Boaz gives her some, she bundles it up and throws it on her shoulder and takes it back to Naomi. She is somebody who knows how to work because she is, if we go back to point one, she is faithful to Naomi. She's faithful to the Lord. She's also faithful to her husband, Mahlon, who's passed on, right?
Yeah.
Proverbs 31 says that this woman does her husband good and not evil all the days of her life. Not all the days of his life, all the days of her life. And that's exactly what Ruth does. Everything she does in her hard work and so forth, she's doing it for her mother-in-law and for her deceased husband. And his name is continued because
of
her.
Boaz even recognized that this was an honor to this man by the children that were born, which is pretty awesome. This is such a rewarding thing to talk about. I wish we had more time. I think about how in my home I get very distracted, myopic at times, and I just kind of forget about the larger work that I want to do for God. But sometimes I just sit down and my wife's like, well, here's what we're going to do. We're cooking a meal for this family. We're going to visit this family. We're doing this. And I just think, you know, how wonderful is it to have someone who is, to put these next points together, just service-oriented, submissive, but serviceful, submissive, but serviceful, and how much of a help that is to me when I lose focus on the things that really matter, which is really just kind of serving people in the name of God. And it brings us to our third thing. Remember on the left, she showed the submissive attitude to Boaz. She went into his room. She sat at his feet. She waited. She was respectful. He was drawn to this, not only her work ethic, but also just her attitude. And then we saw this woman who not only is industrious, but she's serviceful. And we like to connect the idea of submission and serviceful. I think we said this may not prove true, in fact, in every case, but all submissive women will be serviceful because they serve those who are above them. But not all serviceful women are submissive.
Right.
Some are out there doing, and they're forgetting about their obligations, which is a warning in Proverbs 31.
The heart's not right.
Yeah, the heart's not right, and they miss their duty to those in order to do other things. You say, well, did the Proverbs 31 woman, did she take it too far? She didn't, and Ruth is an example of that. She balanced her work ethic with her submissiveness just so awesomely.
And what an influence she has, even on Naomi. You know, when Naomi comes back to Bethlehem, she says, don't call me Naomi anymore. Yeah. Call me Mara, bitter, because I went out full and I've come back empty. And don't you always wonder how Ruth felt about that? You know, what am I, chopped liver? You're empty? I came back. I came back with you. But then ultimately, it's because of her attitude and going out and working that Naomi says at the end of chapter 2, which leads into all the submission of chapter 3, she says, it is good, my daughter, stay with this man. The Lord has not forgotten us. Verse 20, blessed be he of the Lord. He has not forsaken us with loving kindness because this man is a close relative. Her attitude in her service made a huge difference.
And a reward for that, for her, was she wedded into the Israelite nation again through Boaz, and she was redeemed. A great word, we're totally out of time, but a great word in chapter 4 is redeemed and redemption. She's brought back in. She's rewarded. And remember how when we were looking at the end of Proverbs 31, this woman, for her attitude, for her faithfulness, for her servitude, she's known by all, and she's praised. She's rewarded. she's blessed. And we talked to the men out there about making sure you do that if you have godly women in your life. And there's this connection with this early stage of Ruth being able to have all of these great blessings that leads all the way down to Jesus. What a tremendous story. She's rewarded. And we see her as just a beautiful little example. It didn't take 50 years. It happened pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. It happened pretty early in a marriage when she first went into it. I'm sure she pursued all the other ideals of Proverbs 31 for the rest of her life, as will you and in a sense really us. But look at how she was rewarded early on by the man whom she chose to marry, which we could talk to the ladies about being careful with their choice, because Boaz was a pretty great guy too.
He was. They were a match. You know that same word, an excellent wife? Well, that word excellent or worthy or virtuous used to Boaz too. They were a match for one another because of their character. And I'll let you have the last word, but I'd like to say this is kind of the wrap-up for me. We could point out all kinds of differences between the Proverbs 31 woman and Ruth. We talked about their similarities, but think about their differences for just a moment. One was extremely wealthy. Mm-hmm. One was as poor, basically, as you could get.
Okay, good.
One was older. Yeah. One was younger. Mm-hmm. One had a big family. One was a widow who didn't have any children. Yeah. One was a Jew. One was a Moabitess. One had maidservants. The other was a maidservant herself. But their commonalities were more important than any differences, surface differences that you could put on them. And that's what the Holy Spirit's trying to get us to see. They had a common character and devotion to God and their families that caused them to be involved in similar actions performed with similar attitudes. And I'm afraid sometimes the devil has tricked us into asking the wrong questions about Proverbs 31. It's not a matter of how can I do all of the things that the Proverbs 31 woman does. How can I live up to this ideal of having everything together with a clean house and perfectly behaved kids and I have a secular job to boot? All of those are the wrong questions, really. The issue is, how can I have the character of the Proverbs 31 woman? How can I have the character of Ruth with the same kind of commitment and love for the Lord and my husband and my children and all those who are in my family? That's what this is about. And if we can attain that kind of character, it's not about what she does, it's about who she is that causes her to do those things. If we can have that kind of character, man or woman, it's not dependent on our circumstances, around us. It's about who we are in relationship to our God.
Awesome. Make sure you take that home with you, because wherever you are, the principles of these two stories can be used. As you were saying that, it was making me think of marriage vows. When you get married, what do you say? Rich or poor, sickness or health, when we're young or when we're old, till death do us part. It doesn't matter that we say this in a lot of our studies. It's not about your circumstances. It's about God. And it's about you, and then ultimately it's about the way you interact with the people God put in your life. And by the way, that's the best way to change your circumstances for the better, is to reason that way through pure character first, and then let God do the blessing at the end, which both of these stories do. God brings the blessing into people who are like that. We hope that you found encouragement. We have as well. And thank you for being a part of our study tonight. Lord willing, we'll be back here live, right?
Live next week.
As we cover one of the characters from the New Testament. So thank you for being a part of it. We pray for health and safety for your family, and we will see you soon.